It's time. It's time to open your eyes. It's time to open your mind. It's time to grow up and face reality. It's time to lock and load because it's Meat Trapper time. And welcome to another edition of Meat Trapper Radio. Now, tonight is going to be a little bit different kind of show. It's kind of a serious show, and it's something that it's a subject that I'm really torn on. And there's not that many topics, if for those of you that know me, that I'm straddling the fence on. Most of the time, I'm pretty much black or white on a subject. I come down one way or the other, no ifs, ands, or buts. But on tonight's topic, to me, it's never been quite as cut and dried. But before we get into that, there's just a personal note that I want to throw out there. My son, Andrew, is on a travel basketball team, and there are three coaches who dedicate their time and their effort to coaching these young boys. And we travel around the state. We go to different tournaments. It's a lot of time. It's a lot of effort. It's a lot of money. And it's a major commitment from these guys to do this. They're not getting paid. And our head coach this weekend was not at the tournament where we went. And he wasn't feeling well. And today, he died of a sudden heart attack. He leaves behind a wife and a 13-year-old boy who was on the team and who played basketball with us yesterday. And I mention this simply because people, you never know what's going to happen. You never know when your number is going to be called and your time is up. And every single day is important, and everything you say and do is important. If you've got kids, tell them you love them. You may never see them again, and you never know when that day will be. So, that being said, let's go on and let's talk about tonight's subject. And what I want to talk about tonight is public land. Specifically, you know, public recreational land, land for hunting, fishing, trapping, backpacking, camping, off-road use, you know, you name it. There are any number of outdoor endeavors that we as sportsmen engage in, and public land is a very controversial topic for a variety of reasons. Most of the time, people get into, you know, whiz and matches over public land about how it's being managed, what's allowed, what's not allowed, what the regulations are, what the rules are for this, who's getting favored, and all of that. But what I want to do is I want to step back from all of the little details and look at the entire subject from a big picture point of view, from a philosophical point of view, because when you approach these subjects and when you approach an issue regarding public land, you need to have a well-founded philosophy of use, and that can be a lot more difficult to come by than you may think. At least it is for me. So number one, at the very highest level, what is the legal justification for the government owning land? I mean, I think everybody pretty much knows I'm a strict constitutionalist, and there is nothing in the Constitution that says, you know, the federal government can go out and buy own three quarters of a state or two thirds of a state like they do out west. And more importantly, when you look at some of the projects in modern America, you can see some truly horrendous injustices that were done in the name of the greater good. Now, let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. Recently, I was up in the Land Between the Lakes, Tennessee, Kentucky area. Beautiful area, magnificent scenery, extremely well managed. You've got boating, you've got fishing, you've got hunting, you've got all these different activities up there. And from what I can tell, it's very well managed. And this land, I believe it's 144,000 acres, roughly. To me, it's an invaluable resource. It's a wonderful place that you can go and you can camp, you can hunt, you can kayak, you can boat, you can do all of these things. There are great facilities up there. And to me, it's like a jewel because it's so unspoiled. But if you take some time to research it, when TVA came in and started building those dams and those impoundments up there, they just basically seized people's land. I mean, they basically walked in and said, we've decided we're going to flood this area and we're taking this property. Here's what we think your house and your farm is worth. There's your check. Get out. And some people took the money because they knew you couldn't fight City Hall, and some people resisted. And when you really get into it and you study the history, there was an incredible amount of bad stuff that went on. I mean, there were times where people left their homes and the government came in, dug a pit, pushed their house into the pit and covered it up while they were gone. I mean, this stuff happens. It's just horrendous, some of the stuff that went on, that the government did to these people. I mean, they're on their ancestral land where they've lived since, and sometimes since the 1750s, that it's been in their family, and they're basically kicked out. And now it's public land. And so, for me, really produces a dichotomy of feeling in me, because the actions that the government took were absolutely wrong. In my opinion, illegal. But now, fast forward, 70 years into the future, and you look at a lot of the surrounding areas, and this is truly a gem, an unspoiled gem that's been preserved. And had the land not been preserved the way it is, it would be filled with strip malls and McDonald's and used car lots and roadside litter and everything else, just like, the rest of America is. Another example of this is here in Alabama. You can look at the Sipsey River Wilderness area. And this was a little bit different in that not so many families were forcibly evicted from their land because the terrain was so rough and it was so sparsely populated. But it's the same principle. You have land that is completely set aside as a wilderness area where there's no motorized access. If you go in, you're going in on foot. It's completely closed off. I mean, you can't even run a chainsaw after a tornado goes through there. It's complete wilderness. But it's also absolutely the most unspoiled area in the entire state, and it has virgin forest. If you want to see what this country looked like when the Indians roamed it, you go to the Sipsey River Wilderness and you drop down in those canyons and you're going to see what it looked like before Columbus got here. And it is dazzlingly, staggeringly beautiful. Once again, an injustice done earlier gives us a portal into the past. And you can go on and on. You can go back to Teddy Roosevelt and the founding of Yellowstone, all of these national monuments and national parks, you know, the whole nine yards. And that brings up the question of federal control versus state control. And this is where it really gets problematic for me. It really gets down and dirty, because it comes down to, okay, if you're going to have public land, you know, that's the first decision. Are you going to have public land or not? And I guess that's the first decision that you as a sportsman have to make philosophically, is should there be public land or not? And I think I am pretty well convinced that yes, there should be some form of public recreational land. Because if every square inch of the nation is privately owned, then people are going to do what is in their short-term best financial interest. You're going to have McDonald's on, you know, every corner. You're going to have strip malls. You're going to have, you know, check cashing places. I mean, look at what America has turned into when you drive mile after mile after mile. It is not a pretty place. And so I have no problem coming down on the side of, yes, we need public land. And part of that is simply practical, in that anybody who is a hunter, and down here in the South where we have hunting clubs, when you look at what it costs to join a hunting club, what the yearly dues are, when you look at the type of vehicles that you have to access the property because there aren't proper roads, so you're going to have a big four-wheel drive, you're going to have four-wheelers. I mean, I've gone through the math before on other episodes, and I mean, you can spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to try and go deer hunting. And in effect, people simply get priced out of the market. You know, if you're not a well-off person, you quite literally can get priced out of hunting. That's very common. That happens. And so how do you make it affordable for the average person? And that's where your public land comes in. And in my state, we have wildlife management areas, we have national forests, we have a variety of different public lands. Some are administered by the state, some are administered by the federal government. They all have different rules, different regulations, and it turns into a bureaucratic nightmare. And there's been some discussion on Facebook with the recent administration, the Trump administration, sort of loosening some of the federal hold on lands, because under Obama, the feds really, really clamped down on land, federal held land. Now they're trying to open it up, you know, for oil and gas drilling and fair use and recreational use and all of this kind of stuff. And so there's been some discussion that I've read, some good discussion on, is it better for the federal government to control these lands or the state and local governments? And really, in my opinion, there's no clear-cut answer, because on one hand, when you have the feds controlling stuff, there's no legal recourse. You can't, you know, you don't get to vote on who controls a piece of federal land. And when you have a change in presidents, that doesn't really trickle down. Whereas if land is controlled by the state, you have a lot more of a voice in that. But what I've heard and what I've read from some people in some states, there are many states that are highly corrupt, and they're controlled by special interests. And so these individuals, these sportsmen, were saying they felt safer with the feds controlling territory than with their own state, because they knew how corrupt their own state was and how easily their state officials could be bought and influenced by big election money and so that corporations could come in and do what they want and enact their own laws. And so their argument was that it's a lot harder to buy the feds than it is to buy the local guys. I don't know. For me personally, if we're going to have government control, in my opinion, I want it as close to home as possible. That's just me. We do have some federally controlled lands in my state, not much. It's nothing like it is out west, but there are some federal areas here in Alabama. And it's just one of those things where the rules are the rules. You don't really have a recourse. They don't really care what you say. They don't really care what you think. And that's just the way it is. It's just dictated. And if it's dictated good, well, that's so much the better. But if it's dictated bad, then there's nothing you can do about it except become a criminal. Whereas at our state level, there is a lot more of an ability to have an input in these wildlife management areas and these state forests and that sort of thing. Our Fish and Game Commission actually seems to listen to public input. Not always. I mean, we have problems with hogs, and they don't seem to get that, but that's a different story. So for me, we can't undo the wrongs of the past. Whether it's you're looking at the Great Smoky Mountain National Park, whether you're looking at Yellowstone, whether you're looking at land between the lakes, whatever it is, and you probably have a lot more examples on your fingertips in your local area that you can reel off in areas that I've never heard of or injustices that I've never heard of. But be that as it may, what happened happened. And what is, is. And so we can't undo that, but what we have to do is make sure that we manage it the best we can going forward. And ultimately, I think the best model, and this is something that I want to introduce everybody to, it's a program we have here in Alabama, and I think this is the model for how to handle public land, multi-use public land, and to do it fairly. There's a program here in Alabama called Forever Wild. And what the Forever Wild program is it's a privately managed trust. Okay, it's like a trust fund. And this trust has a board of directors. It's a bunch of lawyers who are also outdoorsmen. And it's a cross-section of outdoorsmen. It's not just, hunters, deer hunters or whatever, and it's not just tree huggers, but you've got a variety of interest on this trust, and that's key factor number one. It's not a one-purpose, one-agenda organization. It's a multi-use organization, and it's private. There is nothing about the government involvement here. This is not a state organization. This is not a federal organization. This is a bunch of people that got together and said, we need to preserve land for future generations. How can we do this? And the old adage, money talks and BS walks. And so what this trust has done is it has managed to get private donors, and it has started buying land. And it starts with small parcels. They would go out and they would identify whether it's ecologically sensitive areas or whether it's areas that could be used for multi-use, such as hunting, fishing, mountain biking, backpacking, what have you, bird watching, you name it. And they started with small tracts, and they would buy the land. They would go to the landowner and say, we want to preserve this land in perpetuity. Here's what we can pay. And they would start buying these tracts. And then they were very successful at expanding these tracts. Once they had a core tract, then they could show that the program worked, and then surrounding landowners were willing to sell. Now, a lot of times these sales were sort of, I don't want to say forced, but they were, sometimes landowners will sell to avoid the feds coming in and finding some rare endangered frog or something like that and tying their land up. We've had that happen here in Alabama. But the Forever Wild program has gone in and bought these tracts of land up, and then what they do is they manage them, and they manage them very well. You can go in and you can go beaver trapping, you can go deer hunting, you can go bird watching. They will have a road network in these areas, and the roads will be closed off most of the time to preserve the area, but they will open the roads several times a year for people that want to go in and do off-roading and that sort of thing. So they don't allow the areas to be destroyed, but they do allow people to take turns using them. And this is all done without any government control, without anybody being forced to sell or being forced off their property. It's all done with the carrot instead of the stick. And they have really expanded this program. You can go out and you can make a donation to them. You can buy your license tag and get the Forever Wild license tag with the extra money going to the trust. And this is truly a model. And when you compare it to the strong arm tactics that the government used in the past, to me, there's no comparison between the two. So anyway, if there's anybody out there that's listening to this that is on the fence about public land or government control, or should it be federal, should it be state, well, if you're in one of these Facebook discussions or you're in a discussion somewhere else and people are arguing state versus feds, feds versus state, there's a third way. And this is where people just have to think out of the box. They have to look at these trusts. If you look at organizations that are dedicated to conservation, Ducks Unlimited or what have you, this to me is the way that we need to approach things. And what it involves is citizens, outdoorsmen, sportsmen, hunters, trappers, learning to get along with each other. And that's the key thing, is for this to work, for the models to work going forward, the backpackers are going to have to learn to get along with the trappers. The trappers are going to have to learn to get along with the dog hunters. The dog hunters are going to have to learn to get along with the deer hunters. You know, and the bottom line is it comes down to people. And people have to get their act together. They have to step back a little bit and look at the bigger picture and look at the greater good and learn to work together. Because if they don't, one of two things is going to happen. Either Big Brother is going to step in, hit them on the head with a stick, grab the land, close it off, and dictate the regulations to them. Or else people are going to put Burger Kings and Whopper Doodles on every corner, and there's going to be garbage everywhere, and you're not going to have any place to hunt or trap. The choice is ours. So anyway, the next time that you're out at one of these national monuments or one of these parks or recreation areas, as the sun sets and you look out over the water and you think what a beautiful, beautiful scene this is, don't forget to think back and say a prayer for the people that got forced out. Remember the people that got kicked off their land, that had their lives uprooted, so that you can go and enjoy that day on the water or enjoy that day at the campsite. And if you'll keep that in mind, maybe that will help us take better care and be better stewards of what they gave up for us. And so even if you're not the one leaving the litter, you can be the one picking it up and packing it out. I think we owe them that much. So anyway, I hope this has been thought-provoking. And if you have any thoughts on the matter, feel free to hit me up, meattrapper@gmail.com. Like I say, I don't have all the answers. And this is a hard subject to think through. There are no clear-cut right or wrong answers. And everything is a give and take. We just have to do the best we can. And for me as a person, not only do I want to enjoy nature, but I want to make sure that my son and his sons and their sons can enjoy nature just like I do. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Hello, I'm Johnny Cash.
Hi, I'm Willie Nelson. What do you want to do first? An old cowpoke went riding out one dark and windy day. Up on a ridge he rested as he went along his way. When all at once the mighty herd of red-eyed cows he saw plowing through the cloudy sky and up a cloudy draw.
Their brands were still on fire and their hooves were made of steel. The horns were black and shining and their hot breath he could feel. A bolt of fear went through him as they thundered through the skies. He saw the riders coming hard, and he heard their mournful cry.
Yippee-yi-yay, yippee-yi-yo.
Ghost riders in the sky.
Riders passed on by him, he heard one call his name. If you want to save your soul from hell or riding on our range, then cowboy, change your ways today, or with us you will ride, trying to catch the devil's herd across these endless skies.
Yippee-yi-yay.
Their eyes were blurred, their shirts all soaked with sweat. He's riding hard to catch that herd, but he ain't caught him yet. Cause they've got to ride forever on that range up in the sky, on horses snorting fire, as they ride on, hear their cry.
Yippee-yi-yay. Yippee-yi-yo.
Ghost ride.
Yeah.
Ghost riders in the sky.